Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. This podcast is from the gas programme, and my name is James Henderson. I'm the head of gas research at the Institute. And with me today, I have a senior visiting research fellow, Julian Bowden, who's going to be talking about his latest paper on Southeast European gas markets, the influence of Russian gas on them to date, and how they have the potential to diversify away from that source of supply towards other forms of imports. Julian, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to everyone. Yes, this paper came out in December. I think clearly one of the reasons for doing it was to see how this part of Europe, this corner of Europe, can cope in the current gas supply crisis. How it's positioning itself. Is it doing this as a deliberate matter of policy, or were things already happening and this is just a very severe external event which is prompting more interventions? But I think before we begin on the conversation, let's just define exactly what we mean by Southeast Europe. And in the paper, I take it as the five EU member countries, Romania, Bulgaria, Greece, Croatia, and Slovenia, and then basically the former Yugoslav republics. Some people would call them the Western Balkans, but there here we would have Serbia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Albania, and so on. But the heart of the region, the heart of the economy, the heart of the of gas in the region is those EU five, and they dominate demand, they dominate production such as it is, they dominate the total economic wealth of the region, and so really this really is the core of the analysis, is those five.
Okay, well, thanks, Julian. Let's get down to the gas market element of them. Can you just kind of give us a bit of context and tell us kind of the overall size of the markets and, you know, what the shape of demand is, which sectors are most crucial for gas demand?
Well, the market has gone through an evolution over the years, and a lot of these were almost kind of post-Soviet republics, and demand has dropped a lot from what we would have seen in the 1990s. But today it is just under 30 BCMs. So in terms of the EU, we're only talking about something around 5-7% of what would be the EU total market. So really quite small.
And which countries, are the ones that matter?
Well, the ones that matter are again those EU five, but within those, clearly the big one is Romania, which is a 10-11 BCMA demand country. So I guess similar to Hungary there. The others are all smaller, but we've seen in recent years, despite high prices and so on, countries, in particular Greece, increasing its demand quite rapidly. And then we get in, I think, towards to something that perhaps we can come on to at the end of the conversation, which is the extent to which what we've seen recently in Greece and others, small demand increases in others, is actually part of the energy transition and removal of lignite. So it's an overlapping question there.
Okay. Just before we get on to sort of the future, just tell us, where's the gas being used? Is it in the power sector? Is it industrial sectors? What are the main demand centres in terms of sectors?
Well, I think it's really similar to most of Europe. A lot of gas goes into power. There is some industrial, but that is where a lot of the demand has gone. In particular, in Romania, a lot of the gas consuming industries of a Soviet, which had a Soviet characteristic of needing cheap gas for petrochemicals, fertilizers, and so on. A lot of that has gone. So we're left with a power market, a residential market, And that really is where the heart of it is.
Okay, so and is it quite seasonal? I mean, if it's a residential market, presumably there's quite a big swing during the year. And what's the situation with availability of storage?
Yeah, it is seasonal. There is very high seasonality in all these markets. So I guess it follows a typical seasonality that you would see in much of the EU, because the demand is in power, because the demand is, there is residential demand. There is still some district heating systems there, so clearly that is seasonal. So there is a profound seasonality. And then I think that leads into that other question of storage. Yes, there is storage in the region, in particular in Romania, there is storage. And there are also lots of plans to increase storage. Greece is planning storage. Bulgaria is looking to expand its storage. So yes, storage is important. And then recently, of course, it's been... this has been part of the Russia issue and the EU policy issue of getting storage to a level to get through the winter. And by and large, this region has got its storage up to a kind of European level that we saw generally at the start of the winter.
Okay, well, let's come on to the sources of supply then. Just before we get into imports, just tell us a little bit about the kind of the history of indigenous production to date. Has there been much, and what level of demand has it covered?
It's very nice sometimes to talk about a region, but what that overlooks really is the characteristics of that, or what makes up that region. And so much of this is dominated by Romania, which has got one of the longest gas industry histories of anywhere in Europe. It's been doing gas now for over 100 years. So really. And Romania is almost self-sufficient, not quite. It's a small importer. So when we talk about the region and its requirement for imports, it's apart from Romania. And a lot of what we say when we look at the region is apart from Romania, or Romania is a bit different. But Romania is almost self-sufficient. There's little pockets of production in Croatia, in Serbia, in Greece a little tiny bit, but by and large these are import requiring all these markets require imports to work.
Okay, and so let's talk about that then. I mean, obviously the focus on this paper is on getting away from Russia, so I presume Russia is the biggest source of imports, but give us a sense of how Russia dominates the import market and what are the other sources.
It is Russian imports by and large, and the region was always regarded as Russia's market until Greece built its LNG terminal, which came on in 2000. There was no LNG into the region, and then Greece had the LNG opportunity. But really, this has been a market which has been Romanian production and then Russian imports, and that's how it's worked.
So of the 30, we're talking sort of 20 BCM of Russian imports and 10 BCM of Romanian production, round numbers?
Not today, but at one point, yes, that would have been true. But of course, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've seen much more LNG coming into the region, into Greece and distributed from Greece. And we've also seen Croatia LNG start to feed the Croatian market and also the Hungarian, some of it going into Hungary.
So give us a breakdown of the current pre-Ukrainian war. What was the sort of breakdown of, so if we had 10 BCM round numbers of indigenous production, how was the 20 BCM broken down in terms of Russia and everything else?
Yeah, I think it was the numbers varied. We've seen Russia erode. So we ended up just on the eve of the war, if you will, something like 10 indigenous, 10 Russian, and the rest of it a mix of LNG and then a little bit of gas coming in from the north into markets such as Slovenia, which was sometimes branded as Algerian. But that was roughly the distribution of the supply cake.
Okay, so then of course we get to February 2022, Russia invades Ukraine. What was the political and then the kind of policy reaction in the energy sector to that? Was it a uniform reaction across Southern Europe, or were there different countries react very differently?
Well, I think it was uniform, but not in the sense of being as a result of concerted policy actions at a regional level. But I think most countries took the same view. Where can we get extra supply? Where can we get alternative supply from? I think by and large, although it looked uniform, to that extent it wasn't, and clearly some of the countries put more effort into it than others. And of course Bulgaria was affected by the ruble payment issue and was cut in the same way that Poland and Finland were from Russian supply, and certainly that energized enormous diplomatic efforts by the Bulgarians in May and into June to look for alternative supplies. The Prime Minister was, for a period of a few weeks, jetting around everywhere, talking to anybody with gas about getting gas into Bulgaria. So to that extent, it was a country response, but generally everybody was looking for, can we bring in alternative supply?
And what actually happened to the level of Russian imports over the past 11 months? Has it declined rapidly?
It's declined a little bit, but not rapidly, because of course the other dynamic here is TurkStream, and when we look at Russian gas into Europe now, some of it is still coming through Ukraine, amazingly, but then TurkStream is operating pretty much at very high capacity levels into both Turkey and into Southeast Europe.
So what is the diplomacy here then? I mean, we've talked about looking for alternative supplies, and yet the gas is still flowing pretty much full capacity through TurkStream. You're saying there's not much decline in Russian import of Russian gas so far. Is the policy to actively look for alternative sources of supply and reduce Russian imports, or is it just in case of emergency, we want an alternative?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Russian imports have declined from the pre-war level of around 10, and I would estimate that they are probably running at around 7 today. There's less going into Greece. There's no Russian going into Bulgaria, and I think that so yes, I would estimate at the moment that the Russian is still there, but it is diminished from pre-war levels, but there's still some to go.
The EU has a strategy, obviously, of reducing Russian imports to zero. Would you say that Southeast Europe has a similar goal, or is it just going to continue buying Russian gas through TurkStream unless it gets turned off?
I don't think it started off with that goal, but I think it's got itself in a position where it could take it down to zero. And I think that'll as this conversation develops, and we can talk about the very substantial changes in flow patterns and as a result of infrastructure built in LNG terminals and in gas interconnectivity in the region, that we can see that it's actually by happenstance positioned itself extremely well to cope with a total Russian withdrawal.
Okay, well, let's start to do that then. First of all, what are the prospects for greater upstream production? You've mentioned at the moment Romania is really the only game in town. Is there hope in the Black Sea for other discoveries, other countries to start producing gas?
Post-Brexit, Romania has now become the second largest producer in the EU, second largest producing country in the EU. After the Netherlands, so removing the UK has elevated the importance of Romania, and in this part of I think our short conversation, I'd like to bring in Turkey, where while Turkey is not in my definition part of Southeast Europe, it does have an influence, and so let's quickly start with Turkey, because I think the contrast between Turkey and Romania is very, very striking. Turkey discovered the Sakarya field in the Black Sea 3.5 years ago. It looks like it's made every effort to get it on stream. It's going to do it against the odds. Probably they're talking about March, and I think that's possible. but certainly in the first half of the of this year, they will be on stream with it. A fantastic development, really, really fast. Probably faster, if you think about this as a virgin province, probably faster and more impressive than Zohr offshore Egypt. Really, really quick development. And I think the Turks have done brilliantly in doing that so quickly and with very challenging technology, difficult area, difficult province, and so on.
What are the volumes we're talking about there in terms of production?
They're seeing a two-phase development, the first phase between 3 and 4 BCMs, and then ultimately somewhere over 10. So in terms of perspective, that will take them from having virtually no indigenous production to something like 20% in under 10 years' time. An enormous turnaround. Complete contrast to Romania, where Neptune Deep was discovered 10 years ago now. It has still not got an FID on it. We've had Exxon withdrawing. We've had a shareholder change. And a complete contrast to Turkey, which has really gone for it. Romania sitting on this resource, large enough to transform Romania from being a small importer to, given the size of the market, given this is a sort of 30 BCMA regional market, to actually being being a small net exporter.
And what's the size of Neptune D? What's the production potential?
5 to 6 BCMs.
Okay, so we await. Is there any time scale on that? I mean, is it just completely stalled?
The partners are talking about taking FID this year and then first gas in 2027.
Right, okay.
Which if they take FID is realistic. The engineering is done, the market is done, the onshore pipelines are basically done. In fact, the whole thing is done apart from producing the gas.
Okay, well, it sounds like, you know, if the combination of those two fields, I mean, 10 plus 5 equals, you know, more than replacing Russian imports. But you also mentioned the kind of build-up of LNG facilities. So you mentioned Greece, but what's been happening in the region more generally?
Yeah, well, we started off, so we get to 2000, and then Greece brings on Revithusa. That's it for the region. And then just 2 years ago, Croatia finally brought its LNG facility on stream after many, many years of debate about onshore, floating, size, and so on and so on. They finally, after going through all these iterations and political changes and changes in shareholding and so on, finally done it. And in both these cases, that is all there is now. We have one terminal in Greece, one terminal in Croatia.
And the import capacity is?
The import capacity on Revithusa is around 7 BCMA, and on Croatia, it's just under 3. Revithusa has just done a floating storage unit, so its capacity could be slightly higher. Croatia is talking about doubling its size and with an objective of covering all of Croatian demand and being a regional facility.
Okay, so we've got then these upstream facilities.
So we've got two, and then before Russia-Ukraine happened, there were plans for more. I think that one effect of Russia-Ukraine is to actually give that more momentum. And so I think the likelihood is that we will see Alexandroupolis in northern Greece happen this year. It's the project schedule is for this year, and I think there's every reason to believe that it will happen this year. And then after that, so that's 2023. Then after that, there are now there are several more LNG projects being defined. Most of them in Greece, but not all of them. We have Croatia expansion. We have potentially Albania, where Exxon are involved, and I think one or two of those are likely to happen in the medium term that we're looking at here, which is the next 5 years.
And so what's your expectation of import capacity, say, in 5 years' time, total for the region?
Well, if you add that up, then the capacity would be more than enough to replace all the Russian volume. And it would take you to, at least 20 and probably more. But capacity is one thing. Utilization is another.
No, obviously. I mean, absolutely. So, I mean, and one of the critical questions around that, obviously, is the interconnectedness of those import facilities to the markets. And I think I'd like to ask two questions. One was the interconnectedness to the Southeast European market, so all the countries together. But then, by the sound of it, there's more than enough capacity, at least, both upstream and combined with LNG import, to interconnect with the rest of the Europe and to be something of a hub for Europe as a whole. So what's happening with infrastructure and the whole interconnectedness of that region internally, but also with the rest of Europe?
In some respects, it's a bit like that English expression of waiting for a bus to come along, and then suddenly three of them come along at the same time. We got into the 2010s, the early 2010s, with a lot of talk about along the lines of we, the region, are insufficiently diverse in our supply portfolio, and security of supply is therefore an issue. And basically the region as a number of a collection of island markets with no interconnectivity at all. And then we went through a period of projects being defined, but really nothing happening of any significance. Little interconnector between Hungary and Croatia not used. Little one between Romania and Bulgaria, but not really of any, not used. Basically, very, very little interconnectivity. And then suddenly we get to 2019, 2020, and things happen. And in particular, and I think the big event was last year when finally, the interconnector between Greece and Bulgaria came on, which enabled then TAP, meanwhile, had been built. This now enables Southern Corridor gas to flow directly into Bulgaria. And then, of course, the influence of Turkstream on other flows was very profound, because before that, remember, Russian gas into the region was coming through this very, very large Trans-Balkan system down through Ukraine, Romania, Bulgaria, and then Turkey and Greece. And then overnight, Turkstream comes on, and that flow stops. This pipeline is now empty. What we are seeing now is that that pipeline is being partially used. We have a flow of Turkstream gas into Bulgaria, which goes up that pipeline into Romania. Very small, but it's there. Clearly, the TSOs are looking at other ways of using that Trans-Balkan capacity in reverse flow. Things happen every week in this area. I read just 2 days ago that IGB, the interconnector Greece-Bulgaria, is now working at capacity. So, but I think you're absolutely right. There is this question of, is the internal distribution capacity sufficient to move the gas on from the growing number of LNG terminals? And I think at the moment, the answer is, for the market, the answer is just about yes. If we go to beyond the next 5 years and say, can this region be an LNG importing facility for Central Europe, say, then I think a little bit more will need to be done on the internal network.
Okay, well, look, we're coming to the end of our time now. So I think, I mean, it's interesting you raised the whole Turkstream issue. I'd like to finish, if we may, by just coming back to Russian gas again. I mean, from what you've described, and I think the paper very eloquently describes, you know, there is now the capacity to replace Russian gas completely, should that be necessary or desired. But there's still the question which is being discussed of Russian gas arriving in Turkey, which you've mentioned, and effectively being rebadged and sold on into Europe as non-Russian gas, as LNG. What is just briefly, what are your thoughts on that?
Turkey now is not really outside the region. Turkey is an influence on the region. Turkey already is taking in some gas and sending it on to Bulgaria. There is enough connectivity to do that. There have been some test flows. Bulgarian LNG for Bulgaria could feasibly land in Turkey and be sent on into Bulgaria. Turks are talking about it. Bulgarians are talking about it. and it's been done in a test way. So what happens with, so it is conceivable that that Turkey would be able to take more TurkStream gas in the event of a European ban for whatever reason and however it is done for TurkStream not to be used for Russian gas. I think there is a scenario which says, well, what would happen then is that the gas, crudely speaking, would still flow into Turkey and it would then be rebadged. Turkey would say, we're sending LNG to into Europe and that's all fine. Whereas in reality, it may well be Russian molecules if you could identify them. So I think that the no Turk stream ever, I think that scenario is unlikely. I think you would just see it. You would see some maneuvering behind the scenes.
Okay, well, that's a good spot to end on, I think, and obviously we'll watch out for what happens there. So, Gillian, thanks very much indeed for your thoughts today. I would direct everyone to our website to find your paper on Southeast European gas markets. But for the time being, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you for listening. Please stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.